My name's Joe Moglia. I've spent over 20 years earning my living as a football coach.
I have no doubt that we want to be as good as we can be.
And I've also spent over 20 years as a business executive on Wall Street.
As the economic data becomes more positive, you see more and more individual investors come back into the market.
Joe Moglia is the former CEO and chairman of TD Ameritrade, chairman of the Fundamental Global Investors and Capital Wealth Advisors, chair of the Athletics and executive advisor to the president of Coastal Carolina University. In 1984, Joe was one of 26 people who entered the MBA training program at Merrill Lynch, 25 MBAs and one football coach. By 1988, he was the number one producer in the world. By the time he left, he had been a member of both the institutional and private client executive committees. His final responsibilities were all investment products, the insurance company, the 401k business, and the middle market business. Prior to that, he was the head of global fixed income institutional sales and ran the firm's municipal division. He became the CEO of TD Ameritrade in 2001, and when he stepped down in 2008, shareholders enjoyed a 500% return. In 2009, he became chairman and stepped down in 2020 when TD Ameritrade was acquired by Charles Schwab. At the close, the combined company was worth $100 billion with client assets of $700 trillion. When Joe originally arrived, those numbers were $700 million and $24 billion. Joe has been a football coach for 25 years. He began his career coaching football for 16 years, moving to the business world for 24 years, and returning to coaching in 2009. In 2012, Joe became the head coach at Coastal Carolina. And in his first five seasons, his team went to the national playoffs all 5 years and was conference champion four times. His overall record was 56-22 with a 718 winning percentage. In his last 11 years of college coaching, he was a part of eight championship teams. He also received multiple Coach of the Year honors, including the Eddie Robinson National Coach of the Year Award, was a recipient of the Vince Lombardi Award, and was inducted to the Lombardi Hall of Fame. He was also selected to the Big South Conference All-Decade Team. Based on his success at the FCS level, CCU was invited to the FBS. Joe has received the Ellis Island Medal of Honor and the Sharp Trophy for Leadership. He has been honored by the National Italian American Foundation, UNICO, the Columbus Citizens Foundation, the Irish Arts Center, the American Institute for Stuttering, and the Stuttering Association for the Young. Joe has been inducted into 9 Hall of Fames, is a member of the National Economics Honor Society, and is a recipient of 3 honorary doctorates. He has also given 8 commencement addresses. Joe has already had a book written about his life, and he is the only author to have written books on both investing and football. He is currently writing a book on leadership.
What's mattered to me the most is the impact I've been able to have on others. I know I bring a lot of perspective that's different from what other people have to the table because nobody else has done exactly what I've done. There are too many times where too many people make excuses. If you take away one thought, it's stand on your own 2 feet. It's take responsibility for yourself. It's always treat others with dignity and respect and always recognize you're going to live with the consequences of your actions.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to the Huvane Wealth Management Conversations. My name is Tom Huvane, and I'm a managing director and wealth advisor here at UBS. I'm extremely excited today for today's conversation on leadership and financial literacy. I'm joined today by Joe Moglia. As you just heard from Joe's bio, Joe is the former CEO and chairman of TD Ameritrade. Amazingly, he's also been a football coach for 25 years, with his last assignment as head football coach at Coastal Carolina University. And he's written many books on both investing as well as football. What I'm equally proud about is that Joe and I are alumni of both Fordham Prep and Fordham University in the Bronx. Joe, thank you so much for joining us today.
Tom, I'm delighted to be here. And again, there's not a chance I would be if we weren't alumni of both the Prep and the University.
That's fantastic, and thank you for that.
So, happy to be here.
So let's jump right into it.
Yeah.
You know, Joe, you've had an extraordinary career, not only on Wall Street, but on the gridiron. While coaching, you instilled a leadership philosophy that also translates into our everyday lives. Can you discuss the philosophy, and how would you advise young folks today who are working really hard to grow their careers just as you did.
If it makes sense, Tom, you want me to start from the beginning here because it's a little bit of a backstory?
Yeah.
We'll just jump. Okay. So I grew up in the Dyke Mystery section in New York City, and I was the oldest of five. Seven of us lived in a two-bedroom, one-bathroom apartment. Dad, born in Italy, came here when he was 11, never finished eighth grade. Mom, born in Ireland, she came here later on to marry my dad. She never finished 10th grade. And it was a gang, everything. I was part of that gang. And two of my very best friends in grammar school, who I was with every day, got killed in high school. Mm-hmm. Had I not been playing football at the prep, I would have been with one of those guys. One died of a drug overdose. The other one was killed by the police robbing a liquor store. I would have been with a guy robbing a liquor store. Wow. And that kind of woke me up a little bit. My goal was to play football and baseball in college. Instead, I become a father. And my father's advice, in his fruit store, was, don't go to college. Work. You got a family to support. But I really felt I knew I had to go to college. And he reminded me we had no money. Now there's no football scholarship, baseball scholarship. So it's a matter of I got to take care of this myself. And I said I would do that. And he said, think about it. I came back a couple days later and said, Dad, I really think I got to go to college. He says, you're making a huge mistake. Now, again, I'm in a tough situation. And I've got my father telling me I'm making a huge mistake to go to college. So I wound up going to Fordham. And I had to pay every dime of my education. I supported my wife and my daughter. I drove a yellow cab here in New York City, a truck for the post office, and worked at my father's fruit store. Tom, you're not going to be surprised to hear this, but it wasn't the most fun a freshman ever had in the history of college freshmen. And the one thing that I was missing was sports. Now, I'm very proud of the career that I had at Fordham Prep. And they gave me a coaching job. So my sophomore, junior, senior year, I coached high school ball during the season, worked at my father's store in the off season, and I majored in economics, wanted to go to Wall Street. But by my senior year, I really loved the coaching and decided if I could get a head high school job, I'd want to pursue a career in coaching. If not, I was going to try to go to Wall Street. I applied about 100 places. But at 22, I become the youngest football coach in the history of the state of Delaware at Archimer Academy. Now, that's the same school, by the way, Joe Biden went to.
Okay.
And I had never been really much more than 10 miles outside of New York City. I thought Delaware was the deep south. And I'm thinking, well, what is it that's driving me to, like, not go to Wall Street but really stick with this coach thing? I'm really moved by this. But it's not just a matter of winning. It's a matter of what kind of impact can I have on our guys? So I spent weeks thinking about what is it that's driving me? What kind of impact can I really have on my guys? What is my leadership philosophy? And my very first meeting with the team, and I wrote this when I was at Fordham, was May of my senior year before the 71 season. And I wrote down a playbook. This is about our becoming men. But men is not some tough macho guy. A real man is somebody that stands on his own two feet, takes responsibility for himself, treats others with dignity and respect, and lives with the consequences of his actions. Now, I thought that made sense. That is exactly the same philosophy that I've got today. Now, at Coastal, there were two things that we did that nobody else in the nation did. One, we had no rules. We had one standard. That was the standard. And one other thing we did, we gave up 30 minutes of practice every week. I'll repeat that. We gave up 30 minutes of practice every week. Nobody did that. Nobody does that. We did. Because I wanted to spend time on things that had nothing to do with football. Now, they had a lot to do with the principle, the leadership principle. Now, we called it BAM. The reason why we called it BAM is because I had 120 players. They were all guys. I had another 25 coaches, analysts, interns. They were all guys. So be a man really, really fit. But it's the same philosophy that I raised my daughters at, and it's the same standard that I held female executives to in the business world, whether at Merrill Lynch or at Ameritrade. So that's how that started. That's how that started. And so it's the same philosophy that for me, I've used over the span of my lifetime, and whether it's personal or whether it's the business world or whether the coaching world, it has been truly my competitive advantage.
Wow! So you're no rules, one standard.
Mm-hmm.
That was your philosophy. Simple, effective, something I think most people can understand and execute. Harder to execute sometimes.
Bingo.
But easier to say, but harder to execute, as they say.
There was no question about that.
You know,
I would talk to recruits' parents, and I would remind them of this. And I'd say that, remember, there's a commitment, two-way commitment to live up to BAM. And if your son comes here and he can't play, well, then we made a mistake in evaluating him. But if he comes here and doesn't live up to BAM, doesn't keep that commitment, he will be dismissed from the team.
Right.
And we did that.
Yep.
And we did do that. Yep. Now, I didn't call it BAM in the business world, but it was the same standard. It was the same principle.
Yeah, I kind of get the feeling that, I'm currently on the board at Ford
yep.
Prep.
And it's another reason why I came.
And chaired the finance. But You know, I've always reminded as a board member and as a parent and also as a student that, you know, we could have every one of our students go get into Harvard, but yet fail our mission, which was the Men for Others, you know, be, go out into the world, challenge people, you know, as you said, be a man, stand up. I feel like some of that maybe started to get ingrained in you a little bit as you kind of came through the Jesuits. You think that was the case?
I think that's fair. I think that's very fair. You know, at times when I've spoken at the prep and times when I've spoken at the university, I've said that. Mm-hmm. Remember, I just said I wrote this when I was still a senior before I graduated from the university. And I think from the prep, you talk about a Men for Others. A real leader, it's not about that person. It's about the people that they're responsible for.
Yes.
A lot of people kind of forget that, and their egos wind up getting in the way.
Right.
At the prep, I certainly learned – I had to figure out how to take responsibility for myself without question because nobody's going to baby me.
No.
And you always were expected to treat the people around you with dignity and respect, right. Always. So growing up like that with the prep and then the same philosophy, but it was more significant with the prep because it was a tighter, closer group.
Right.
And remember, I told you about my career in college. I was working all the time, so mm-hmm. It wasn't like I was even there that much. But that philosophy would be true both the prep and the university.
Right.
And I think it has a lot to do with that philosophy.
Yeah. No, it seems to kind of come through. And we see that a lot in students years down the road, sometimes decades down the road. And, you know, we do share kind of a similar background, a little bit different times. But, you know, growing up in the Bronx, immigrant parents, you know, understanding – you know, what that's like, fathers who ran a small business, you know, and learned how to get up every day and go to work and really instill a lot of that work ethic in their children. And there's a saying in life that, there's a saying that life gives you the test first and then the lesson. You faced many challenges in your long career. So Joe, can you prepare for a crisis or do you need to be tested first?
I think both of those things happen, and you learn a lot when you make mistakes. So there are times when you didn't anticipate something, you get tested. But as you gain more experience, you recognize a real leader has got to put together – football and business, you've got to be able to put together a well-thought-out strategy that can handle a lot of different contingencies. Mm-hmm. But then to be successful, you have to simplify that strategy so your team or your organization or institution can execute that. Mm-hmm. So in that preparation – you look ahead. Football, for example. Okay, we know we're going to face a triple option team over here. We know we're going to have a pro attack over here. We're going to face a 3-4 defense over here. They're going to play more man. They're going to play more zone. This is what they do with their special teams. We got to anticipate all that ahead of time. And then there were different crazy things that happened in a game. So by the end of spring ball, we know all the difficult decisions we're going to make in a game. We know we're going to go for two. We know we're going to fake a kick. We know we're going to do all those things.
Yep.
It's the exact same thing in the business world. We've got to anticipate, you know, in the world, the financial world, we've got to anticipate that everybody's talking about what the Fed's going to do tomorrow. The reality is they're going to raise rates. We know they're going to raise rates, and we got to be able to adapt and adjust to that. So we got to prepare for that, and we got to know what we're doing. If we're going to try to develop a business overseas, we better know what our competitive advantage is overseas.
Right.
If all of a sudden, what happens when we get hit with a financial crisis? I don't think anybody was expecting the financial crisis, but you know, you can see the dot-com boom happening at the end of the 90s and going into Y2K. You could see it then. So you've got to prepare for those things. So when they happen, you understand it and you've got a solution and you can move quickly. And if that solution is the wrong solution, again, you can't allow your ego to get in the way. You've got to stop, recognize what you're doing wrong or what you're missing so you can redo that again.
Right.
If something hits you and you hadn't anticipated for it, well, now you got to adapt and adjust. You better be very sound in terms of the different things you think about. You got to have your people with you and believe in you. And then you got to get together right away to be able to solve where that crisis is. So both of those really go hand in hand. But the reality is the great leaders, they are prepared for most of those crises.
Right. They're always thinking ahead and always thinking about what could be the next thing.
They have to have that plan.
You know,
yeah.
And be ready for that and always have the contingency. So I agree. Those
otherwise,
are great.
Otherwise, time you've got egos that are so big, they assume that this plan is going to be foolproof.
Right.
It's never going to have a problem.
Right.
And
right.
We all know that doesn't exist in whatever field we're in.
No, those egos go away very, very quickly. We spent a little bit of time talking about leadership. I know you love talking about it. I love listening to you talk about it. But there's another passion that both you and I share, and that is financial literacy. How can we help the next generation make smart financial decisions, Joe?
You know, when I left Merrill Lynch to take the job at Ameritrade, it was after the dot-com boom, and Ameritrade was having real trouble. They were going out of business. And when I used to look at marketing, and I used to look at different firms, and their mission was always, or usually something like, you know, we want to be the investment firm of choice. You know, we want to be the hospital of choice. You know, but it was always about them. Now, again, leadership's about somebody else. Mm-hmm. So I gave that a lot of thought. And the story is, I met with my executive team, and I wanted to get this out in the open early on. And I discussed, I wanted it to be aspirational, mm-hmm. and I want to be thoughtful. I want to be about our clients. So think about this, and we'll spend 10 minutes on it, 2 weeks.
Okay.
I came up with, I want to bring, our mission is to bring financial literacy to every family in this country. And I said it was aspirational, and it was about our clients.
Right.
And the reality, Tom, and you know all this, the typical family spends more time planning a vacation than they do managing their money. Now, let's go back to my leadership philosophy, the whole BAM thing. Well, somebody better be taking responsibility for the finance in your family. I'm not talking about the welfare of our children now, and health. I don't mean that. But other than that, that's probably the most important thing you got to be able to stay on top on. And people are not taking responsibility too often. Oh, it's so complex right. with regard to different things. And the buzzwords can be a little complicated, and you can kind of get those screwed up a little bit. But the reality is it's not that complex. Mm-hmm. So in an effort to be able to emphasize that, that's when I had already written a book on football. That's when I wrote a book on investing. And I wanted our client base to frankly see that if you just pay attention, you got to learn some things. But this is stuff that you can do yourself. Now, you may very well recognize that you need a financial advisor to be able to help you. So what kind of questions are you going to ask the financial advisor? The better the questions you ask the financial advisor, the better feedback you're going to get, and you'll make the better decision in terms of which financial advisor you're going to go to. And clearly, at the end, you go to the Uvane Group. That's it.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's a great point. I think when we think about our clients and, you know, we think about the things that we talk to them about in finances, you can hire a financial advisor in order to help you make those decisions. But one of the things we also really put a lot of emphasis on with our clients is, listen, you've got to have responsibility here too. You know, you've got to be thinking about the things we're recommending. At the end of the day, you have to ask great questions, as you said. There's a great saying, I actually have it on my computer at work, where the quote is, don't judge a man by the answers he gives, but by the questions he asks. And people who are really great at asking good questions, you know, tend to get a lot better information out of people. And so I think that's really a great philosophy in learning about that. You know, when we think about from UBS's perspective and Huvane Wealth Management, and we think about the young generation, you know, we've done a couple of things to really help them really understand finance. And I think one of the things we saw is the emergence of Bitcoin, the emergence of meme stocks have really engaged younger investors. So now they're on board. They understand. They see that, you know, they see how they can learn from this. But now I think it's time to get them focused on what's really important to help them build their future wealth in a responsible way. You know, as chairman of the investment committee at the PREP, you know, one of the things that we did is we allocated actual capital to a fund for students.
Yeah,
in fact, You spoke to that class for them to manage. We didn't want something online. We wanted to give them the responsibility of having actual money to manage. And we incorporated it into the classroom. So it became part of the honors class of economics and taught by a couple of the teachers in the school. And then we gave them an investment playbook, kind of what you gave your players.
Mm-hmm.
And it had committees. It had risk measures. They have to report back to the board once a year on their successes. And then they also have to present to the next group of students the things they learned, the potholes that they fell into, what they would do differently, what they liked about the program. So we wanted them to not only help themselves, but now help the next generation. And now on my team here at Huvane Wealth Management, you know, one of the really big things that we did is we began a next gen program. A couple of years ago, run by my next gen, my son Thomas, and
that's
right
the
now,
baseball player, right?
Yes, yes.
You St. Mary's. He's a prep guy too.
The third baseman.
Third baseman. Yeah.
Yes.
Good hands, quick, good arm.
Yes. As he got bigger, he moved from short to second to third. So that was really helpful. So he's running that for us, and what it's really doing is focusing on our clients' children, ages 15 to 30. and just really continually helping them in their education, their financial literacy. Is that something that you think is really important?
I think that's fantastic. Kudos to you on that. One of the reasons why I think maybe families don't take it as seriously as they should is, number one, they're not getting that type of education. I think in grammar school, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, you should be taught, like, if you get an allowance, mm-hmm. well, if you can you allocate the allowance? Have you thought about a budget? Have you given thought to expenses that you're going to have? Just get people thinking about it. Just start to take a little bit of responsibility for it. It could be a 15-minute class once a week. Yeah. But you start to get to high school, and I think it should be a regular part of high school mm-hmm. education. So what you just talked about with the investment club, there should be classes along those lines. Yes. Talk about finance and talk about different things. And then you get into things like budget. You get into things. You start to understand what after tax means. And if I have X amount of money coming in here, well, I really don't. Because it's after tax, I don't have that much money.
Right.
And to what extent, when, for example, should I leverage? When should I borrow money? When should I do all these things? I think if we did a better job of making sure that our kids mm-hmm. growing up understood that they had a responsibility with regard to financial matters and it's something they're going to take seriously right. and then continue that in college. But they don't do that. That right. doesn't happen. And I think that if you want financial literacy, and we do, then I think you got to get it in the schools. I think you got to get it in the schools.
Yeah, I think that the universities, the high schools, the grammar schools, I think there is a sense of responsibility. Because if you think about you and I growing up as first generation, our parents didn't have the wherewithal or didn't have the education to teach us about finance or making investment decisions or making life financial decisions. And now there's a group of immigrants coming up in grammar schools and high schools and colleges, and like us, they were not really taught that. We had to learn it either on our own or through trial and error.
Mm-hmm.
So I think education is really the education system has to take some responsibility in that. But certainly, Wall Street can help, right? We can help provide them the tools, the online learning, online services, and online education is really taking off like wildfire. Companies like UBS are doing a great job at that, and for us, with a focus on it on our team, it's really helping educate those children. And look, we're doing it for business reasons too, right? We know that the next generation is going to control the current generation's wealth. And so we want to make sure that we're there when that transition also happens.
I think that's great. That's a great philosophy, and I couldn't agree with it more. You mentioned the meme stock. So when GameStop first took off,
right.
And I gave a lot of credit to the Reddit leadership to having first found the trade, you know, the short at Melvin Capital
mm-hmm.
and of GameStop, and then pulling everybody together to start to get involved and buy it. Now, I gave them a lot of credit for that. And also the institutional people got to learn from that too, because the first time they got burned because retail had a good, solid strategy and idea that they could execute that they were assuming they're never going to hurt by retail. Where I have a problem, where it bothered me, and I was doing a lot of interviews back then, and where I had a problem is that, okay, I buy the stock at 10. And that's, I think, where it was trading. And, okay, now it gets to 20 like in 10 minutes.
Right, right.
Do I not think about trimming a little bit off right. the table? Or what happens if it gets to 200? I start to buy in then.
Right.
And then at some point, it just starts to go the other way. So I think, you know, we owe it to our society mm-hmm. to make sure that it's great they start to make money, but then there's got to be some risk management skills right. that they learn. And some of it's just common sense. That's why it's got to begin early on, at least when you're freshman in high school. And the common sense skill is like, I just risked, meaning I could lose it, you know, $1,000, and I just doubled my money. Just common sense. What would be a good idea then?
Right.
Suppose you took half of it off the table. You'll never ever lose any money and then see what happens right. after that. But that doesn't even get discussed.
No.
So I think what you're doing as far as you and your financial consultant team, I think that's right on, Tom. I think it's great. Frankly, clients, you know, are fortunate to be able to be with a group like that.
Great. Well, thank you. And we actually get a lot of accolades from the parents. You know, these are folks in their 50s and 60s, and we sit down with them. We explain how we're going to help educate their children. And the first time you hear about investments should not be when you get a job at 25 and you need to make your 401k choices, right? You should have heard of these things before you get there. And they feel very relieved that we almost take that away from them off their shoulders and say, we got this. We're going to teach them the right way. We're going to show them how to do this. They're going to be teaching you things soon. And you're going to have a lot of confidence that your children are going to be prepared when the day comes that, you know, they're ready to go out in the world as well. So
You know, kind of an anecdote with that. So at Fordham Prep, where we went to school, I loved being there because you have a lot of inner city kids that struggle and don't have much money, uneducated parents. But then we also had a very, very affluent group coming in from Westchester, right, where the fathers had, you know, everybody graduated from college. They'll have great jobs, doctors, lawyers, executives, et cetera. And whether you were an inner city kid or whether you were coming down from Scarsdale, the understanding of money still really wasn't there. So it wasn't like you have an education and you make some money and you're teaching your kids that. So I want to jump now to kind of what you're doing with the parents. They're your clients and their children.
Right.
I still think you got to push that this is the parents' responsibility too, because no matter how much time you put in, you're not going to be with those kids as much as the parents are.
Right.
And the parents should be talking to them about different things that are popping up, different things that might happen with regard to the market or the world or something along those lines, or something maybe happening in their own portfolio, or how they're deciding. How do you decide to get a second car versus a vacation? How do you decide this thing versus putting money in the marketplace? So I think, again, I think parents, remember, for me, it's all about, bam, taking responsibility for yourself. So the kid's got to think that way. But I think early he's got to be taught, or she's got to be taught. And I think the parents got to begin taking responsibility for that. Bringing you in is great. But you know what? I wouldn't let them get off the hook. Okay. This is still their job.
Okay. I mean, that's great advice. And I think, you know, providing them with either tools to do it or even encouraging. Like, this is how, you know, when my son wanted to learn how to play baseball, he said, take a rolled up socks and just play catch with them in the backyard, you know.
Yeah.
Just teach them how to just do something. Don't just have them show up for the game.
So if he missed, it didn't break his nose.
Exactly. And then when he's throwing the ball from third to first, he probably could have broken a nose. So that's all great. Well, Joe, you know, listen, I could talk to you all day about this stuff. This is, you know, you're really passionate about it, as I can tell. And it's certainly a big passion of mine and certainly has become over the last many, many years. So, but I want to kind of wrap this up I really appreciate what you're doing for us today and having this conversation. And, you know, we like to end these conversations on a little bit of a lighter note. You know, I know you travel the world. You've had some very interesting stories from all your careers that you've had in football and in Wall Street. Is there a particular experience or interesting story that you'd like to share?
You know, Tom, if you don't mind, I think I have two. Remember earlier
I said
there were two things Coastal Carolina did that no other team in the nation did? First, we had one standard. We had one standard. It wasn't rules. And secondly, we gave up 30 minutes of practice a week to work on things that had nothing to do with football but could have everything to do with their responsibility. So with regards to the time, we call it LAF, Life After Football Sessions.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the greatest threat in the world, and this was a few years ago, I still think it is today, it's not getting as much attention now, but I still think the greatest threat in the world is terrorism.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we live in the greatest country in the world, but there are hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people that would not hesitate to give up their life, and they have unlimited funding to take our lives away because they feel we're evil. Right. And they feel their family's going to be rewarded in the afterlife. That's pretty intense motivation. All right. So I wanted my guys to understand that. I want to understand the roots and how it came and how it evolved, how they fund themselves, how they train, how they market. And my kids knew what ISIS stands for. My football team knew what ISIS stands for. I bet you 99% of the United States doesn't know what ISIS stands for. All right. So with that, then became, well, how do we defend ourselves? Through the military. So we got guys, my players, same age as my guys, that are putting their lives on the line in the Middle East.
Right.
Why? So we can play college football, so we can live in freedom.
Right.
So number one, I want them to appreciate those people.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, with those freedoms come responsibility. Go right back to BAM again.
Right.
Well, if the military is that important to us, we can only pray that our military and political leaders have the guts. This is also part of BAM.
Mm-hmm.
Have the guts and courage to do what they believe is right.
Yep.
For our long-term national defense. Well, what role do we play there? We get a chance. We vote.
Mm-hmm.
We vote. In 2016, in what was about 140 years of college football history, we were the only program in the history of college football whose entire team voted for the President of the United States on Election Day 2016.
Wow.
Now, because of that, we got some notoriety for that. This year, the NCAA actually told college, you know, we want you to give your athletes off that day so they can vote.
Right.
And there's about 25 football programs that said, oh, our guys are voting today.
Right.
But
right.
That wouldn't have happened if we didn't do what we
right.
did. So, again, those are the lessons with responsibility. Now, in terms of the leadership principles, with those are no excuses. So it's too easy for your son to come home and say, how come you didn't get a good grade? Well, my teacher doesn't like me. Well, how come you're not playing as much? My coach doesn't like me. Or the coach saying, how come you're not working as hard as you could? Well, you know, my parents don't understand me. I got a problem with my girlfriend. It's too hot. It's too cold. Interest rates are going up. I can't deliver the production that I would normally want to. I have, you know, compliance and legal's a pain in my ass. I would do much better if it weren't for them.
Right.
In a way, they're all excuses. So to share a story, it was 2014. We were 11-1, and we were ranked 7th in the country, and we're in the playoffs, and we're playing Montana, who's 4th in the country. But we're playing at Montana. Normally, playing at Montana, they'd probably be a touchdown favorite. They were 28 points favorite because this was going to be the coldest day in the history of college football. The actual temperature was -7, wow. And the actual wind chill with existed the entire time was -26. Right now, Sunday, we're evaluating the team for the next day, and we're usually excited to kind of get moving. And we're a pretty good team. We're doing well. And I could tell in the conference room, the coaches are not, there's something missing. And finally said, there's something wrong. I kind of started, there's something wrong here. And they said, well, coach, you know what it is? They said, we had a great season. And we know we could play with these guys, but coach, it's going to be -25 degrees. I said, we live in South Carolina. We practiced last week in 72 degrees temperature. We got 15 kids on the team, don't even know coach. They've never actually physically seen snow.
Right.
And I said, here's a problem. I said, the problem is if we lose that game because it's cold, you're going to let yourself off the hook and say, hey, we lost the game because it's cold.
Right.
If cold is an issue, then we got to make sure that we're addressing the issue. Right. Right? So we've been together for the last 12, 13 weeks. So we got together and we reached out to people that had done research in the Arctic. And we spent 30 minutes a day only talking about how you protect yourself if it's cold. Mm-hmm. We practiced like we were actually in the cold. We went there a couple of days early. And one simple example, we had one bench, and the player comes off the field. First thing he does is take off his helmet. He said, no, you can't take off your helmet. You take off his helmet until you get to the bench. We got torpedo heaters, which are like little jet engines on each end of the bench. So the kid puts the helmet between his feet. And we got radiant heaters over the head. So by the time he goes in, his feet are warm. He's putting on a toasty helmet, and his face and helmet is already warm.
Right.
Okay, now, in football, a lot of times, I want my guys to be educated and understand what's going on, but coaches can be blockheads. You know what? Don't worry about it. It's not that hot. It's a mind over matter. You're tougher than that. Don't worry. It's not that cold. In this case, the headlines were, the Cowboys are going to play the Beach Boys. And that's where the 28-point favorite came in. And I had no doubt their coach was telling them, hey, you know, come on, are you kidding me? Right. These guys, they may be they're coming in from South Carolina. Like, please, this is going to be a joke.
Right.
And sometimes when you do that, you see it in the pros too sometimes, and I think this is ridiculous. The kids come out, no matter how cold it is, they're wearing like short sleeves. Okay.
Right.
It's a mental. That's right. Crazy. Yeah. All right. So we're warming up. And we did a good job preparing for this. And we got stuff all over our place. You can't even see everybody. We had chicken soup instead of Gatorade because everything froze. They come out on the field for warm-ups. They were short sleeves. I said, we got a shot here.
Right.
After the first 3 minutes, we were down 14-0. We scored the next 42 points unanswered, and we were up 35-14 at halftime, and we won that game, and we moved on.
Wow.
I was at Dartmouth when we beat Harvard and we beat Princeton. I was at Lafayette when we beat Lehigh. I was at Fordham Prep when we beat Xavier. I was at Nebraska when we beat Oklahoma.
Right.
I've never been part of a game that was so special than that because what we did to be able to do it. Go back to band. Take responsibility for yourself. Treat us with dignity and respect. But there are no excuses. And you're going to live with the consequences of your actions. I think those are a couple great examples in terms of what we try to do.
Right. Wow. That's really
pretty cool.
A fantastic story. And, you know, you're so passionate about, you know, not only education and leadership, and it really comes through. And this is why I really was looking forward to this conversation and learning more about Joe Moglia. And this has really been fantastic. And I want to really thank you for doing this.
Well, one thing I'd like to share number one, I wish you and all your team and all your clients the very, very best going forward. We're in difficult times now.
Yes.
Everybody recognize that.
Yeah.
But the one thing I want to share with everybody, when I was at Fordham Prep, one of the places I would sneak to when I was underage, a place called Uvain Taverns. As it turned out, that was your father's place.
Right, right.
So I knew your father a long time ago.
Right. Well, you must have went in there a few times and cashed your checks.
Well, he served me.
Yes,
but
yes.
I was underage. So
sure
we got along.
I think the age was
18
then.
It was 18.
So it was,
yeah,
it was 18. I mean, and that was a great time in a great neighborhood. And I learned a lot. And I, you know, one of the things I learned as I grew up is that I didn't realize until I actually got into high school that people work 9 to 5 and Monday to Friday. I thought everybody worked
7 days a week,
exactly.
6 days a week, 14 hours a day.
Yes, and so that was all part of the work ethic and understanding, taking risks, you know, and then sometimes doing things that maybe they don't produce anything for you, but you always got to be out there plugging. You always got to be out there trying. And I try to instill that in the next generation, in my kids and in my team. So, you know, we work really hard for our clients. We take it personally when things happen in their lives and not just financial. You know, if something personal happens with them, we like to take care of them. We like to celebrate the things, you know, that whether it's birthdays or anniversaries or a grandchild. We really like to make sure that they're taken care of and let them know that we're always thinking about them. So I think
that's great. That's why you should do that.
Yes.
It's about them.
Yes. They come first. So I want to thank you, Joe, for sharing your time and your insights with us today. If you'd like to learn more about Joe's work, you can visit his website at Moglia, M-O-G-L-I-A, .com. And thank you all for your time today, and we look forward to the next conversation. Thank you. Thanks, Joe.
Thanks, Tom. It's an honor.
That's great.
Thank you.
That's fantastic.
Thank you for listening to our Huvane Wealth Management Conversation. Please enjoy our other podcasts available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and on our website at ubs.com/team/Huvane.